Fellow Falcoholics, what is up? Welcome to another episode of the Dirty Birds and Brews podcast. I'm your host, Kevin Knight, joined today by the one and only Daniel Flick at By Daniel Flick on the Twitter X's, whatever the heck you want to call it these days. Daniel, welcome back to the show. I know you're busy reporting in from, I believe you said, Mike McDaniel's table at the NFL owners meetings. How we doing?
Yeah. Currently at the table occupied by Mr. Mike McDaniel earlier today, among others. This is actually a pretty popular table after he left when people were eating breakfast here. So it was like the all insiders table. So I feel out of place here. I'm one of about three people in this room right now, but I'm happy to be on, glad to make my return. It has been a minute. I think it was like week seven, week nine, something like that, sometime in the middle of the NFL season since I was on the pod. So I'm back, ready to go, fresh. So let's get after it.
Absolutely. Well, obviously a lot has happened since week seven. We have a new coach. We have a new quarterback. We have a whole free agency period behind us and the draft in front of us. So lots to get to today. We'll get Daniel's take on the happenings and sort of anything that any buzz that he's heard from the first day of the owner's meetings. You know, I'm sure Mike McDaniel's aura is still, you know, over the table. He does have an aura for sure. But we'll get into that, guys, and more on today's show. Real quick, want to bring you word from our sponsor, BetOnline.ag. Folks, March Madness is here, and BetOnline is your bracket headquarters for the season. With the best contests out there and odds, lines, and info on every game and every round, right up until the national championship game itself. If you're not like Bijan Robinson and didn't have, you know, one of the top 0.001% of all March Madness brackets, that's okay. You can still get your bets going on the games themselves, bet on the Sweet 16, the Elite 8, all that good stuff on BetOnline. And you can access the most up-to-the-minute wagering information anytime from your desktop or your mobile devices, even track your bracket real-time all the way through the tournament. So what are you waiting for, folks? Head to BetOnline today and get in on all the action. Just remember to use our promo code BELIEVE, that's B-L-E-A-V, for your 50% welcome bonus on your first deposit. BetOnline, the game starts here. All right, Daniel. Well, I feel like we have to start with the big news of the past few weeks. It's sort of just overshadowed everything with the Falcons, which is Kirk Cousins in, Desmond Ridder out. Obviously, Kirk Cousins is probably a little more impactful than the Desmond Ridder trade, but it was a big move by a lot of accounts. Kirk Cousins is the number one free agent available, obviously the most expensive free agent signed in this cycle. And Atlanta, in desperate need of a quarterback, may have one, at least for a few years here. What did you think about the decision to go with Kirk Cousins for the Falcons?
Yeah, I think you're right. Like it feels like it solves the problem for now. It feels like it's kind of a stopgap situation. It's a lot, but it's not a bridge. Obviously, it's obviously nowhere close to a bridge, but it is kind of in that sense of, it feels like Atlanta's kind of got the solution for two, likely 3 years. We'll see about a fourth, because they'll be age 39 in that fourth year of that contract. So the Falcons have an out there where they can, you know, maneuver out of that prior to year four if they want to. But I think it's, again, we've kind of talked a lot about how Atlanta's QB play has been so subpar, and that this team, this roster last year, had enough pieces on it to win, and to win more than seven games. Probably realistically should have won about 10. The fact that the Falcons went 7-10 the last 2 years with the level of QB play that they had is pretty impressive, I feel like, in a way. And I think speaks to how much talent is actually on that roster. A large majority of which is returning. And so I think you plug and play a guy who's made four Pro Bowls, who's made three Pro Bowls in the last 5 years, 6 years. I don't see how that can hurt you at all. I think it's going to be a positive. I think it absolutely makes Atlanta the front runners in the NFC South. I do think you're still kind of back in that same conversation of, okay, but what about the future? What's next? Because realistically, you don't sign a 35-year-old with the expectation that he's, you know, here for a decade, or he's here for 8 years. And that's why they sign him to a contract that's largely putting him in Atlanta for about two or three. Still, I think it's the right move for where the Falcons have to be now. I don't think you can spend as much money as they did last offseason and then not commit in full a QB, because at the end of the day, whoever you have a QB is ultimately probably kind of like deciding how good of a team you have in this situation. We just saw it, right? You go 7-10, you kind of waste that really good free agency class. So now you add a really good quarterback. You add a guy that should provide leadership, should provide a high level of play, potentially a Pro Bowl level of play. And I think it'll ultimately help Atlanta snap that 6-year playoff drought.
Yeah, no, I absolutely agree. And, you know, you said it, like, having the quarterback situation that Atlanta had last year put a hard cap on this team's ceiling. And obviously, you know, we could talk about the passing game and it wasn't executed very well. And maybe you could squeeze a little bit more out of that passing game than what Arthur Smith squeezed out of it last year. But the point remains the same, that if you don't have, you know, that old saying, right? There's two types of teams in the NFL, the ones that have a quarterback and the ones that don't. And if you're in the ones that don't category, all you're doing is trying to find one. And the Falcons had to find one, and they did. And you look around the NFL and you still see plenty of teams that haven't found that answer yet. Now there's still the draft available for those teams. But as we've seen, like, there's going to apparently be teams jumping all over each other for the opportunity to draft a fourth quarterback in this class. And maybe even teams considering trading up for the fifth quarterback, which is also crazy. So the Falcons sort of avoid that sweepstakes and preserve their draft capital in exchange for spending the salary cap. And curious what you think about that angle of it, you know, dedicating the salary cap to the quarterback as opposed to trying to trade, you know, potentially two or even three first round picks to get up for the rookie quarterbacks in this class.
Yeah, especially I think when you think about the money that they've invested the last few off seasons and where Atlanta's salary cap situation's at now, that need to add young talent who's on cheaper deals, I think, is paramount. And so I personally feel like when you're committing heavy capital, because again, either way, whatever avenue Atlanta chose to pursue, it would have required pretty extensive capital. And so I think this way you're landing a pretty proven player. You're landing somebody who, yes, he's expensive. Yes, he's occupying cap space, but you also know what you're getting, and you're not risking however many first round draft picks with the chance that this guy's not going to end up being good and then setting your franchise back. I think the signing for me, what it does is it gives the Falcons a level of stability that they haven't had, and a solid floor that they haven't had really for the last 2 or 3 years of like, hey, again, this is a team that went 7-10 each of the last 3 years, has won 7 games, I believe 5 out of the last 6 years. You add a quarterback like Kirk Cousins, you know what you've got. It should, in theory, just elevate you. Whereas if you end up adding that rookie quarterback, you don't really know. You know, you think you know, you think you have that long-term answer solved, but you don't really know. And so I think for where Atlanta's at, this is the avenue that made the most sense. I think any chance you have to look, I'm kind of in that boat of like, I think occasionally first round picks are overvalued. I think some people are like, oh no, like, you know, hugging them, holding on for dear life. I don't want to lose those. And I totally understand that. And I sometimes, you know, fall victim to that mindset as well. But I think it's also in this case, if you're Atlanta and you do have so many of these guys on pretty hefty contracts and, you know, they're kind of out of that cap rehab stage and they're now in that stage where it's like, hey, there's a lot of guys on pretty solid contracts. You need young talent still. And ultimately, I think that the more chances you get to hit on that young talent, the better off you're going to be. And I think that pursuing this avenue is what's best probably for Atlanta now and realistically probably the future as well. Now, look, obviously it changes if you hit on that, you know, whichever QB you end up drafting. But it's also a whole lot riskier. And I think for where the Falcons are at, taking the smarter play, the more calculated play is what was needed.
Yeah, you know, if you sign Kirk Cousins, you get Kirk Cousins, but a first round pick could be anything. I mean, it could even be Kirk Cousins. So you know, the famous Simpsons meme there. So, but yeah, you're right. Like, people tend to overrate, and this is something that everyone does, sports fans, everybody, like something that's open-ended, like a draft pick could turn into something great, but just getting something great is better than the chance of getting something great. You know, my saying is, you know, a franchise quarterback in hand is worth 3 first-round picks in the bush. So, sure. You know, we'll say approximately that with Kirk Cousins, but the real thing with him that most people have harped on, obviously the age is one part of it, but the Achilles injury, and what's your level of concern about that? I mean, it's kind of, other than I guess both him and Aaron Rodgers with the injuries in the same season at their ages, which is very unusual to begin with. But how much concern do you have for him, that injury and its impact on his ability to play in 2024.
Yeah, you know, I don't personally claim to be a doctor, and I don't think a lot of media people do. I would hope not anyways. But from what I know and from what we've heard Kirk say, what we've heard the organization kind of say, and everything that's come out about the situation is everybody feels very positive about where it's trending. And so for me, I personally have not heard anything that would push me to feel any other way. So I think personally, I think surgery's, again, I don't claim to be a doctor, but I feel like modern medicine and modern surgeries and things of that nature have kind of transcended the way that some of these injuries are treated and how athletes heal. And I don't think an Achilles injury now is as, you know, potentially impactful and harmful as it would have been, say, 20, 30 years ago, to where I personally, from what we know and from how quickly Kirk was able to start training again and things of that nature and where he's at in his recovery, it sounds like it's all good. And I feel confident that when he does return, there shouldn't be any lingering effects.
Yeah, I mean, that's obviously the hope, and Atlanta must feel confident in that considering the amount of cap they dedicated to him and the fact that it's fully guaranteed and all that. So we'll just have to see, you know, if he's ready for training camp. I don't think anyone will be upset at all. But if he's not ready for training camp, I think we'll see some people start sweating. But we won't know until the time comes, obviously. So what do you think about the big moves? Darnell Mooney obviously coming in to be the wide receiver too. How does that one strike you after the Falcons didn't really find, well, any answers at wide receiver last year aside from Drake London, who we know is good?
Yeah, you know, the one thing for me when I think back on the Falcons receiving core for the last few years is that it feels like they've needed that number two and they've added a body there, but then they haven't added, it feels like they've added somebody with speed, but only in a niche speed role. And I feel like you add a number two who has speed the way that Mooney has speed and who can really open things up vertically, real explosive player. That's the type of complementary asset that I feel like Atlanta's needed opposite Drake London for the last several years, really. And I feel like with where they're at, the contract made sense. I know a lot of people initially saw him and were kind of like, you know, woof. But that second year is a bit expensive. But other than that, I feel like it's a fine deal. And I think that the level of play that he brings, again, you think about a guy who had, I believe, 1,100 yards his second year in the league. Last 2 years were not quite at that level. Obviously, a lot of inconsistencies in that Chicago offense kind of hindered him as well. He's proven that he can be a 1,000-yard receiver. He's a very high-quality route runner. He's a natural separator. I think about the success that Kirk Cousins had with Jordan Addison in Minnesota, very similar frame, smooth route runners. Again, I'm not saying they're the same player, but, kind of a similar skill set there, very similar frame, actually. So I think about that. I think about that type of complementary skill set. With Drake London, I think this helps them out substantially, but I think that they've so long needed a number two who complemented what he does. And like, I think back with Bryan Edwards and I think back with Mac Hollins, and it feels like you're just kind of hoping that they can kind of add on to that level of production they had in Las Vegas. Each of them had in Las Vegas where it was like a solid year. And it's like, you know, there could be more in the tank. With Mooney, you're kind of hoping he gets back to where he once was, but you know that his ceiling is significantly higher, and you know that his floor for the last 2 years, while not very good, still adds an element to Atlanta's offense that currently, or that prior to adding him, was not seen. And I think that just his presence, his ability to really stretch you, I think him and Rondale Moore, I'm sure we'll probably talk about here in a little bit, but that speed, that athleticism, I think was a huge asset for Atlanta's offense.
Yeah, no, you brought up a great point about the similarities with Jordan Addison and the frame, very similar. Mooney, a much better athlete, actually, surprisingly. So, you know, considering Jordan Addison had some good but not great testing, Mooney obviously turned in the times in the 4.3s and the better jumps. So, you know, I'm not saying Darnell Mooney's better than Jordan Addison necessarily, but you know, maybe we'll see after this year. We do know that Kirk Cousins asked for Darnell Mooney specifically, so you know, that obviously means that he at least likes him, so that should be good. But yeah, you mentioned Rondale Moore, who kind of like the wild card of the group. Great athlete, obviously, ran in the low 4.3s, but again, another smaller guy and someone who had a ton of production thus far. So what do you think about that addition and where he might fit into Atlanta's plans?
Yeah, you know, when I look at Rondale Moore, I think about somebody who at Purdue was so electric. And I remember how some of how high some of that hype was his sophomore year there, entering that injury riddled junior year that kind of hurt him a little bit. But, you know, with Rondale, again, the playmaking that he brings, I think of a guy very innovative when he's got the football in his hands. And that type of explosive and really creative playmaker hasn't been present in Atlanta. And I think as you're trying to add pieces and stack playmakers around Kirk Cousins, I start thinking about what skill sets aren't there, right? And even with Mooney, with how talented Mooney is and how good he is at what he does, I still think Moore is like a separate type of playmaker and how you can utilize him and what he's good at and the traits that he brings. They're obviously each very athletic, but the ways that they win are not the same. And I think that Falcons offense so desperately needed people who could create plays and who could hit big plays. I think Atlanta's longest play from scrimmage last year, if I'm not mistaken, was a 75-yard touchdown from Tyler Allgeier on a screen pass. And I don't think about Tyler Allgeier as being a big play threat, you know? And so, yeah, it's kind of the situation where I feel like they just needed pieces. And you start adding pieces, you start stacking athletic, versatile weapons. To me, when I saw – because again, with Ridder, the expected return, if you would have asked me what I expected, I would have guessed like a 2025 third day draft pick where it's probably like a fifth, a sixth, a seventh, like some type of, you know, pretty subpar draft pick. Instead, you get a guy in Rondale Moore who on a 1 year deal, probably only in Atlanta for a year, but can legitimately impact this offense and allow Zach Robinson some added flexibility that he otherwise would not have had with some of his concepts offensively.
Yeah, I like it. I like the pick a lot. I think it's interesting. Obviously, you have the insane athleticism, and I think he was on a really good 1,000-yard pace previous year, but ended up getting hurt, you know, only played 8 games. So definitely some untapped potential there, and you love the buy-low ability of it, and the team kind of interesting how eager they seem to have been to move on from Ridder. But, you know, they do end up keeping Taylor Heinicke as the backup, which I think surprised a lot of people. Was that surprising to you that they end up going the veteran route there with Heinicke?
Yeah, and you know, the more that I've kind of looked into Atlanta's cap space situation, the more that decision kind of confuses me. So I'm very excited. We talked to Terry and Raheem tomorrow, and I am excited to hear what they say about that because I am personally very curious about that. I think it's a decision probably that's more driven towards surrounding Kirk Cousins with veteran pieces. Or, again, somebody that's really flourished as a backup in his career. And Heinicke has, again, kind of proven in that same role that he can probably put you at like a 500 caliber team when, if he's, you know, thrown into action, which again, Atlanta's certainly not hoping he plays much in 2024 and beyond. But I think sometimes that presence of having somebody there like that, and it kind of removes any possible strain of a relationship of like, well, is Ridder still in the mix? Is he still a potential answer in the longer term? So to me, I entered the offseason thinking, hey, he's a cheap backup. He's somebody who has proven that he can play at a pretty good level. Because again, some of the highs that you saw from Ridder were really good. And there were stretches where it's like, huh, you know, he may actually be able to really become something here. And it just never, you know, really just never kind of formulated. But to answer the overall question, I really thought that Heinicke would probably not be on Atlanta's roster. It felt like that's where it was trending. It felt like that's what made the most sense financially. I wouldn't be shocked. This is, you know, like completely just kind of something that I was kind of thinking through in my head, but Atlanta could probably release him with some type of agreement of like, hey, we'll, you know, re-sign you in whatever role. And it saves about $7 million in cap space if they cut him and then, you know, re-sign him whatever form. But that was just kind of my personal thought on that. But I really thought that you'd see Ridder end up staying, Heinicke end up parting ways, because it would have saved Atlanta several million in cap space. And you can see they're kind of tight right now at about $2.5 million, I believe. So that was something I expected them to try to, you know, add some flexibility financially and kind of roll with Ridder there. It's not how it ended up playing out. So that was, for me, a very underrated, surprising move for Atlanta this offseason.
Yeah, and you mentioned it. You know, they have basically spent down to this point the cap space, but they're very much not out of cap space. You know, they have many, many avenues for creating cap space if they wanted to. And it's been kind of surprising, given the signing of Kirk Cousins, that they haven't elected to create any more space and make any more additions. Are you sort of surprised that they have been so quiet, especially on the defensive side of the ball, after making what seems like an obvious sort of win now move with Kirk Cousins? What do you think about sort of the kind of lack of defensive moves that thus far in free agency?
Yeah, it definitely is a bit surprising, considering that you bring in a head coach in Raheem Morris, who is just a defensive coordinator in Los Angeles for 3 years, and obviously comes from a pretty heavy defensive background. But yeah, that's still, to me, I think if you're Atlanta, I completely understand the philosophy of where they're coming from, right? Because you have, if you're going to invest all in on this veteran quarterback, invest all in, right? And you've kind of seen them. Obviously you spend really big money on the QB, and then you spend the rest of your financial capital adding weapons for him. And so I completely understand that philosophy. I think what it ultimately comes down to is, I would assume the Falcons kind of throughout that whole experience at the combine began looking at their draft board, their evaluations, and felt that, like, hey, we can add a more competent number two receiver, whatever type of player in that regard there, versus, you know, some type of edge player. And then, like, hey, we like this edge class, or we like this corner class. We feel like we can, you know, maximize value this way. So I kind of think that's what happened. Again, I'm excited to hear some answers on this, because that will for sure be a question that is asked. It is kind of interesting that, you know, they don't let Terry and Raheem talk until now. And there's kind of like that. A lot of teams have had press conferences between the start of free agency and now. But I think it definitely is a bit surprising that they just haven't addressed it, especially Atlanta's defense felt so improved last year. But then, like, you look at some of the metrics, and again, it was obviously kind of a little bit unrepresentative because of the way the last few weeks of the season went, and allowing 85 points in two games, I believe it was 85, and just that whole situation. But still, metrically, the Falcons had a few metrics in their favor. There's a little bit here or there, pretty average to mid-pack in really a lot of categories, not enough to where it's like, oh yeah, we're completely good, right? And there's still holes. There's still a pretty big question mark at number two corner. There's still a lot of questions on the edge. Each of Atlanta's top two sack artists from last year, and Calais Campbell and Bud Dupree, are currently free agents as well. So there are questions there. I thought you would at least see them bring in some type of veteran piece on the edge, or, you know, perhaps retain Campbell. But it just hasn't really come to fruition yet.
Yeah. It's been really interesting there. And it seems to suggest that the draft is where they're going to hit the defense hard, or they're sort of waiting to see if they can pull off a bigger move. And they're kind of trying to keep their money in reserve until then. I know there's been a lot of, like, Hassan Reddick speculation, you know, some kind of trade there. And there's been talk of, you know, obviously there was rumored interest in Danielle Hunter. And you know, I know from the reporting from Albert Breer that they were potentially interested in, like, Christian Wilkins and stuff like that. So they definitely seemed like they were interested in addressing the defense. It just didn't work out to this point. But I kind of doubt they're done, obviously. I guess we'll see if it's bigger moves or smaller moves. But at this point, they seem to be sort of waiting patiently. And I do wonder if you're right, that it is that they like where they're positioned in the draft, potentially at 8 or elsewhere, get these defensive pieces that they need. And we've already seen that they've met with Dallas Turner, and there are all these top edge guys that should be available at 8. You know, do you think that that's pretty much where they're going to go? Or do you think they're juggling a lot more at 8 than sort of it seems like, based on their needs at this point?
Yeah, I tend to think that edge at 8 is the current pretty heavy favorite. I think edge at 8 or trade down. I think a trade down is a very plausible answer. But I think it really kind of depends on what happens in that that QB market at the top of the draft. But I still think that eight's a pretty solid trade down location for teams in need of a QB, need of a receiver, even need of a pass rusher. If Atlanta has somebody it prefers more, like, you know, Latu from UCLA, if he's more the guy that they want, they feel like they can move, you know, a few spots and still land him. I think that'd be an interesting and a very interesting avenue. But I personally feel like that edge is the current favorite. I think when you look at the needs, you look at kind of the way that Raheem last year in LA had so many various sources producing pass rush. I do think there's a part of him that kind of looks at like, hey, LA drafted a couple guys in round three last year who combined for 17 sacks, right? And just played at a high level. And I'm sure there's a part of him that's like, hey, you know, I can really develop pass rushers, and he can, right? But you're also not expecting that every year. And so I think he sees the impact a rookie pass rusher can have. And I think that currently I'd say Turner's probably the favorite at eight. I still think regardless of what direction, I think edge has to be, if I were, you know, if I were in Vegas, if I were a gambling man, I would probably lean the edge route as of right now. Yes.
Yeah. Yeah. So are you personally a big fan of Turner at eight, or do you prefer one of the other two guys?
Turner does intrigue me. He does, because, you know, I've watched Alabama quite a bit over the last several years, and just I distinctly remember his freshman year, the way that he just kind of emerged and just played at such a high level. And a lot of people kind of, I think you reach prospect fatigue at a certain point with guys where they're just really good at a really big school for a really long time, and it's like, how good really are they? He's just really, really good. And that step up from high school to college was never too big for him. Incredibly athletic, high ceiling. I think he's going to end up being a very good pro. I think, you know, he's got a high ceiling with how athletically and physically talented he is. And I'm excited to see the type of player he can evolve into. And I really think in Atlanta, the system there, the way Raheem kind of wants to run things, I think you'll see if that's the avenue that they go, I think it's a good environment for him. I do think that the idea of Atlanta selecting Turner is intriguing for me personally, just again, with how freakishly athletic he is and the pedigree and everything. I think he's got a really good profile.
Yeah. Yeah. To me, it was the arm length that really, like, I think I expected him to test like crazy. I mean, I think everybody did, but measuring him with the arm length that he had and the wingspan, that was like, oh, okay, well, now we're having a different conversation about, you know, oh, you're just a prototype, like, completely. Okay, cool. It's hard because, you know, Jared Verse, so good and so productive, and Laiatu Latu, like, maybe the most polished pass rusher I've ever seen coming out of college. So they've got no shortage of options, and you mentioned the trade down as a possibility. I think absolutely that's in play, and a lot of that's going to depend on who's there at eight. You know, if one of the wide receivers is there at eight, I think that's a good opportunity. Obviously, if the quarterbacks don't go as quick as we think at the top and the fourth one's still there at eight, there's going to be people climbing over each other to get that pick. So we'll see how that turns out. But speaking of day two, the Falcons have 3 day two picks right now and could potentially get more if they do this trade down. What do you think the priorities are on day two? Because we know, like you said, the Rams last year drafted a ton of players on defense, played a lot of them early, and it ended up working out really well for them. It doesn't always happen, but it you know, you have to think maybe that's Atlanta's strategy, considering that they haven't done a whole lot in free agency on the defensive side. But what do you think about their potential plan of attack on day two?
Yeah, I think whichever avenue they end up not pursuing at eight between defensive end and corner immediately becomes the next top priority in round two. And then beyond that, I think Atlanta still probably needs another receiver, especially with Moore on a 1-year contract right now. I think that's kind of an avenue that Atlanta should heavily pursue, is adding in a potentially even a second wide out there. Like with Mooney, and again, like I mentioned earlier, they're kind of hoping he can return back to that 2021 form. If he can't, then there's still a need for somebody else there. And regardless, I think if you're in an offense where Mooney's your number three, your offense is going to be really good, or at least has the weapons to be really good. And so I think receiver is another area that I think Atlanta will still heavily consider. I think a few other kind of underrated positions of need there. Offensive tackle. I think adding somebody behind McGarry, behind Jake Matthews, is an interesting one. Center. you think about having Drew Dahlman on the last year of his rookie contract. Those are kind of a few areas. I still think in terms of priority positions where they end up going, again, whichever one of defensive end and corner isn't the one at eight, I think that's where they'll lean. Beyond then, receiver, I think safety is a very viable option. Depending, I'm kind of eager to hear Raheem's thoughts on what he has at safety right now with Richie Grant and DeMarco Helms, because he hasn't really talked too much about them yet so far, and we'll kind of see where he's at with them. But that's kind of where my mind's currently at. And again, the other part that I don't think should be ruled out, Atlanta does have a lot of depth questions at defensive end, at outside linebacker right now, to where could they double dip? It would not necessarily surprise me if they did. And this is an organization, a front office staff that really values improving the trenches. And this is a head coach who really values defensive line play as well and really values pass rush. And it wouldn't surprise me if you saw Atlanta take two guys.
Yeah, no, I wouldn't be shocked by that at all. I think if they don't make any veteran additions, for sure, I think we're going to see multiple edge rushers added and maybe a nose tackle or other defensive interior help too, just because you can never really have enough, as we saw last year when both Onyemata, Lakayle London, and Greger were all out of the lineup at one point, and it was like, okay, we're going to have to find some guys. So you better, you know, get your helmet on, Daniel, because you're going in. So hopefully we don't get to that point. Yeah. But Daniel, thanks so much for making time for me during your owners' meetings. Appreciate all the intel. Appreciate the great work you do. Daniel, he is still at by Daniel Flick, right? I didn't mess that up.
Okay. Yeah, that by Daniel Flick.
Okay. And let the people know where they can find your great work.
SI.com/NFL/Falcons for all my stories. We'll have a lot of content coming out from owners meetings. Actually, the second I finish this, I got to go finish another story from owners meetings. So the grind does not stop. I'm excited, man. We have Terry and Raheem tomorrow and should get some pretty good content from them. And Twitter at by Daniel Flick. And as always, Kevin, really appreciate you having me on. Always glad to stop by, and I'm glad we could make this work.
Absolutely glad we could find the time, guys. That is Daniel Flick. I'm Kevin Knight at Falcoholic Kevin. Please do like and subscribe if you haven't done so already. Leave that 5-star review in your podcast platform of choice. We will be back on Wednesday with the Falcoholic Live at 8 p.m. Eastern with some kind of surprise guest that is still in the works. You know, we'll see. We'll see who appears just in time. But again, thanks to Daniel for coming on. Thanks to everyone for watching, listening. We will see you guys real soon on Dirty Birds and Brews podcast and the Falcoholic Live. Thanks again to BetOnline for sponsoring today's episode. We'll see you next time, folks. Have a great day.